Hey now, everybody. Welcome. I'm Nick Taylor, Executive Director of Alumni Relations here at Saginaw Valley. Really excited for this episode. This is the Cardinals Standout in Their Career podcast presented by us here in Alumni Relations. And we got a special guest today. Super excited. 2022 Distinguished Alum. We won't clap too much here in the room, okay? Don't worry. But a good friend, someone I've known for a long time, and a very established, well-written author as well, Mr. Jared Morningstar. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So, Jared, right now, you're obviously an author. You're out there writing and doing it, but you're also a teacher, right? Can you tell the folks where you're teaching and how it's going?
I have been with the Saginaw Public School District since the 2007-2008 school year. Most of that time, all but 1 year, I've spent teaching at Saginaw Arts and Sciences Academy.
Yeah.
And it's been exciting for the entire time, but we're in an interesting spot right now because we're moving into a new-to-us, beautiful, historic building, the old Arthur Hill building that's being renovated, refurbished, and it's going really well. It's exciting.
That's awesome. It's awesome to hear. Well, so today's topic, we wanted to talk to you, Jared, a lot about the writing process. We have a lot of folks out there who are, like me, aspiring authors, people who, you know, have that great idea for a book in their head. And we wanted to talk to somebody who's gone through the process and actually made it happen. Right? Made their dream a reality in that. So, you know, maybe could you start off talking a little bit about what inspired you to start writing books? You know, how did you decide on your genre, and maybe explain a little bit about your genre for folks who don't know your material out there?
Okay. So actually my inspiration for writing creatively really came from the university here. I hadn't really done a lot of serious creative writing at all up until I switched from literature as my English focus here at Saginaw Valley to creative writing. This was probably 2004, something like that. And I quickly took to fiction in a new way and poetry in a new way through Dr. Sammarco's classes, Dr. Kerman, who was here at the time. And I loved reading and literature, but I never really thought much about creating. That was new. I just fell in love with the process. And it was something that I didn't know that I was going to love. And I didn't write for publication once I left the university and for several years after that. I think that part of that was probably a little bit of imposter syndrome and things of that sort, but I had a lot to learn too. But as I started working with student creative writers, I got a lot of inspiration from them and the process, and my love just kind of grew and grew. And finally, I decided to start putting pen to paper, and I started rolling with it. I've never been particularly inspired to write longer works like novels and such, or longer plays or whatever. I'm primarily focused with short stories, and that was my first love of writing, was short stories. And eventually that love extended on to poetry. And so that's what I wrote. And since probably about 2017, my productivity really picked up as I continued to enjoy it. And I continued to like fall in love with the craft and learn more about the craft. And within a couple of years after that, you know, publications were happening, and then the books would happen. And it's been a journey, and it's been a lot of fun. And it's something that I plan on doing for a long time. It's a good gig. It's fun.
So let's talk about some of the books first, okay? I'm going off script already.
That happens. Okay. That's okay.
But this is your latest book, right? Lost in America?
Lost in America is my newest book, yes.
Okay. Now, tell us, for those of us who don't own the book already, tell us a little bit about it. What's in it? What can a reader look forward to?
Lost in America, first of all, it's my favorite one that I've done. It is a collection of poetry. It's complete poetry. The other books that I've done have been a mix between short fiction and poetry. And with this particular collection, with the previous two, I kind of like was just going off just kind of like the broad theme of America and Americana and different elements of it. This has that too, But as I was putting the poems together for this book, I started to realize that this overall theme of identity was surfacing. Different aspects of identity, whether it was my personal identity. There's more personal stuff to me in this book than probably any of the others combined. But also identity of country, identity of celebrity, what it means to find yourself versus finding yourself in others. And I really like that. And I like I said, I didn't set out to do that, but I figured out that that's kind of like what was happening about halfway through the process. And so then that helped me guide my writing through the rest of the book. And I'm really proud of it. I think the topic itself is one that's, I think, more important today maybe than ever, as people, because everyone goes through an identity search, but nowadays, just finding different aspects of yourself with an identity, who am I, where am I, all these things, it's, like I said, it's definitely the work that I've done that I'm proudest of. And so, and it's funny because, like, even now, like, I'll start, like I mentioned, imposter syndrome.
Sure.
I will go through that book sometimes. I'm like, did it really turn out as well? And I'm like, I read it. I'm like, wow, this actually is pretty not, this isn't too bad. Nice. So it's kind of fun.
So you mentioned in there a little bit about process. Let's talk process. I love just hearing people's habits and routines. Can you talk about maybe a specific routine or a habit that you've held that's helped you be productive as a writer? And when I say productive, I think we got to make sure people know, like, this is the latest of several books that have been published since 2020.
Yeah.
So you're pretty not completely prolific out there, but you're a pretty prolific writer in the sense of that. What habits or routines do you have that kind of help you stay engaged with that?
That's a great question. And I will tell you, it's not easy. In addition to being a teacher, in addition to being a parent of small children, I have an hour commute. I live in Mount Pleasant. So, and then I'm being a husband. And so finding time to write, for me at least, is not easy. Mm-hmm. I have friends who, they have lots going on, but they don't necessarily have like all of these things happening at once. I'm really bad with scheduling. I don't have like a specific time during the day where I'm going to sit down and write. I'm working on a survival mode sometimes. Like, I'm trying to write whenever I have time to do it. Now, that's routine. So my routine is kind of sketchy in sense of like there's nothing concrete. But when it comes to habits, that makes the habits even more important in the things I do to stay engaged. Because if I get an idea, I'm usually in the middle of something, because I'm always in the middle of something. And so when it comes to ideas, I want to get it down. Like, I've got to get a note down somewhere. And so I'll use something like this, like a little field notebook, or I have the notes app on my phone. I'll pull that out and just type a quick note. So even if I can't get to it right then, which I usually can't, I know I'm going to have those notes later. And that's really important for me. But I think that's important for, I would imagine, a lot of people who are writing creatively, because ideas, for me at least, and then this is another, I guess, on the habit topic, I am looking around when I'm out about in the world, because I feel like, at least for my kind of writing, which is whether it's poetry or fiction based in realism, the real world is what inspires me.
Sure.
And so I'm always, even if I am engaged in a different kind of activity, whether it's dinner or shopping or whatever, I always have my eyes open. I have to be in that mode where if I see something, I'm observing those little things that happen that some people miss.
Right.
I've got to be able to take note of that and get that down, because that, I think, especially within the worlds of realism, those are like the things that people often miss. But when people read them, they can automatically relate to it. Maybe they didn't think about it before, but these are the kinds of things. Like, I've had people tell me before that I notice certain things about the world that a lot of people just don't. And that happens when you're taking notes or taking, even if it's pictures on your phone, just taking a picture, like, I got to save this for later. I just always have to pay attention. And when I'm paying attention, I'm always got to take notes and I got to get that stuff down. So when I do get to my completely all over the board time to write, I've got those materials and I'm ready to go. The same thing goes for, you know, if I'm just collecting observations, I have to make sure that I keep them in a secure place because I don't want to throw things away. And I tell kids, don't throw your scraps away, because even if you think that there's nothing there now, if you pull those scraps out days from now, weeks from now, even years from now, which I've done, those things can turn into something. And so it can get kind of messy, but it's important.
I think it's really funny, you know, you holding up the field journal and then you mentioned the notes on your book, something you and I share in common. And now for me, it's not creative writing. I'm creative, but not nearly in your league as far as creation out there and content. But for me, it's just for work related. I Siri, hope she doesn't answer right now, but Siri is usually the one. I'm like, hey, Siri, don't forget to email Jordan about this or don't forget to do this. And I set up those reminders all the time. So it's interesting to hear that even in the creative, for me, it's not a creative process. It's a work mode productivity area.
Sure.
But in the creative process, it's just as important.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And I know it's not just me, because I've listened to interviews, whether they're music artists or poets or whatever.
Sure.
And I hear them say similar things. I'm like, oh, I'm not a weirdo. Like, I'm actually, I got this. Like it all makes sense. And other people, it works for them too.
Shoot, Jared, by the time we're done, you might have me writing a book. I'm just throwing that out there. So let's talk a little bit about, we talked about the process and things in your habits. I love that. What happens though when you kind of hit that wall? You know, I hear a lot of writers talk about it, and they've talked about different strategies and ways that they try to get over writer's block, or just even, I hate to use the term writer's block, just moments where they feel stuck in their work, where it's not progressing where they want to. For you, what are some of the things that you do to help you either get out of that bind or create something more?
That's a great question. And this actually applies to me as a teacher as well. I try to follow the advice that I give to my students. I work with 9th and 10th grade primarily. And a lot of them come in and they've got some raw talent, some skills. But they don't necessarily know out of the gate everything that good writing is. And I try to show them that, and I give them prompts to produce that. But they hit that wall. And I tell the kids about this. I'm like, it's about 3/4 of the way through the year. And it happens when they've produced a few works that they like, that they find to be quality. And when they get to that point, though, they start knowing what good writing is, and they know they can do it. But then all of a sudden, they meet with frustration when they can't produce quality writing all of the time, or they run out of ideas, and they start to maybe even sometimes doubt themselves. And the same thing happens with me. And what I tell them is the worst thing you can do is stop.
Yeah.
If you stop and let yourself get caught up in the frustration, let yourself get caught up in this idea that, oh, I can't write anymore. I have no ideas. I'm not seeing the progress. What do? I tell them, we were talking about scraps earlier.
Yeah.
And I tell them, like, look, you got to just keep putting pen to paper and do the absolute best you can to not let that frustration get the best of you.
Yeah.
I tell them, like, it doesn't matter what you're writing about. Just write about things you're observing. Don't even try to write a story.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even try to write a poem. Just write down your observations. Write down these little details. And I tell them that because, one, it does keep them writing, and it helps them build these scraps of observations that one day, whether that's within the next couple days or whatever, those things that might just turn out to be scraps that you weren't even thinking about might actually give you ideas for new works.
Yeah.
But if you stop writing, if you stop taking those observations, if you stop looking around, then it gets a lot harder to break out of that. And so it serves for idea production, idea curation, but it also keeps you writing, and it keeps you focused, and the door might be shut a little bit, but it's not going to be shut completely. Sure. And so, and obviously that's taking into consideration that, you know, people have schedules, people have other obligations, and it gets hard, but at least there's something there that you're building. Right. And eventually, with all of these ideas in place, it's a lot easier to produce stuff later than it would be if there was nothing. Right. And that's why I tell them, you just got to write through it. And that's what I try to do as well.
Nice. Okay, so we're out there. We've used our scraps. We've got great ideas. We've been producing content like none other, right? We're writing out there. Walk us through the editing process, right? Because there's got to be a pretty heavy, I can imagine with someone like you who's observing all the time and all of your different notes, there's got to be a lot of stuff out there that you've written and you've kind of gone through and edited down. Talk a little bit about the editing process, and then how do I make the decision, okay, now this manuscript is ready to be submitted? What's that final go ahead? Because I can tell you in this process, this would be the hardest thing for me to figure out.
And it's not easy for me either. Okay. And that's coming from an English teacher. That's coming from someone who, honestly, I do a lot of, especially when it comes to grammar and conventions, I do a lot of my own editing work. Mm-hmm. My publisher will look it over too. And I'll usually give it to people who I trust as writers that will go through and look for things like that. It's very tedious. And I'm the kind of person, as someone who is a real, like a perfectionist, mm-hmm. it gets really hard to let go. And it's not even just grammar and convention. A lot of it too is content. Did I say this line as well as I wanted to? Did I overuse this word? Did I develop this theme well enough? Mm-hmm. And that actually even takes a lot longer than the grammar and convention stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm bad sometimes because there are at least some things that have ended up even in my books that I'll eventually read. I'm like, man, I'm not satisfied with that. And obviously I can't change the publication, but it won't stop me from changing what I've written. So I'm not the best at letting go. But after I have read through every, and I try to, like, because I work with short works, mm-hmm. I also, will edit as I go. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I just editing completely at the end either. A lot of the pieces that end up in the books originally were published in anthologies and different magazines. And so that actually might help a little bit, is that I'm editing as I go, as opposed mm-hmm. to just doing everything at the end. But it's still a process. I've got to get it in the hands of trusted folks. I got to let my publisher take a look at it. And I've got to make sure that I'm satisfied with it too. And usually I'll read through everything multiple times, even after I've edited the individual pieces, to make sure that everything is as I want it to be. Occasionally there'll still be an error that slips through, which is a bummer, but luckily I'm in a spot where I can let my publisher know and say, hey, look, you know, in future presses, will you please fix that? And then they're usually pretty good about that. So that's been nice.
So you mentioned the publisher twice in that. Yeah. And I got a question, because this, I hear this a lot, and I've talked to some literary agents and I've talked to some publishers, but I've also talked to people who have tried to self-publish their work, right? Sure. What factors should I or other writers consider when trying to decide between, you know, that traditional publisher model and self-publishing? What are the differences?
It's really complicated. And all of my work is through very, very small presses. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. I think the perks of a traditional publication is, especially the larger publishing houses, sure. is that they have a greater outreach, right?
Yeah.
Like they have more connections, whether that's through agents or stores. They have the ability, I think, to get your work out to a larger audience. And they, the larger the publishing house, I think usually they do most of that work for you. Mm-hmm. Now, the downside of that, though, is one, creative freedom. If they're going to look at your work and they're going to sell your work, they're interested in making money, because yep. they're big, right? And so they might say, look, this isn't working, or this, in my case with short stories and poems, like this we want to leave out. Or they want to pick your cover design, things like mm-hmm. that. Like they want to make all of those choices for you. So you do sacrifice some creative freedom that way. They make a lot of choices for you. Whereas with small presses, on the other hand, they don't have that outreach, which mm-hmm. is, you know, that hurts, especially if this is going to be your career, your sure. primary career. So they don't have that outreach. You might have to do more of the publicity work, mm-hmm. promoting work. Now my publisher's small, but they'll help a little bit with that. They'll find opportunities for me and things of that sort. But they're not going to do all of the work that a traditional house would, that is larger, that has the ability sure. and that kind of outreach. So we have to do a lot of that stuff. But I have had complete creative freedom mm-hmm. in what I put into my books. The publisher has never told me, you can't publish that poem. You can't publish that story. This isn't working for us. I've had the ability to dictate the order that my poems and stories are in the books. I've had the ability to choose who I want to write my forewords. I've had the ability to choose my covers. I've had input on all of these things. And so, and I know that that might not be for everybody, but for me, at least, as someone who is more interested in the artistic end of it, rather than the money-making end of it, mm-hmm. I actually like the small press, and the self-publishing is a little bit different, but there you got even more work. You probably sure. have more freedom because you're doing everything yourself. Sure. But with self-publishing, then you really are doing everything on your own without a whole lot of input. Sure. And so it's a spectrum. Usually, I guess it all comes down to, as far as like what a writer should prefer or what they would prefer. I think it depends on the individual who's writing the work themselves and what they're looking for.
Well, we got to give I just have to bring it up because I got to give your publisher a little bit of credit. I just love the name. Alien Buddha Press.
Yes.
Is your publisher through there. And I think they've been with you through all of your works, right?
Correct. Yes. Yep.
So awesome. And you mentioned too in there a little bit about the freedom to choose like cover art and your cover design. What role does cover design or that formatting? You also talked about like the placement of those poems and what role does that play, do you think, in a success of a book? How can authors assure themselves that they're putting those things in the right place?
I think that it's a very important decision. I know like the old saying goes, don't judge a book by its cover. But I also know that in the real world, people sometimes judge a book by its cover. You know, your presentation starts with the first thing someone sees, mm-hmm. And that is the cover of your book. For three of my four books, the cover actually comes from photographs that I had taken. Other one, I purchased the rights to a piece that I was able to use. And I think that both methods work. But the big question, the big point is like, how do I choose? Mm-hmm. And what I try to do, again, keeping like the art of the situation in mind, is I try to pick an image that matches the overall themes and the topics and content within the book. Like, for instance, with Lost in America, the idea, as I was talking about before, is a lot of identity search, right? And it's a picture that was taken right off old Route 66 in Missouri. And it was a picture taken on a bridge that had closed, road closed. And when I was putting that one specifically together, I got to thinking about how, like, when we are searching for identity, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a smooth path, right? Like, it's a trail. And sometimes we do meet with dead ends or road closed, and we have to find new directions and circle around and all these things. And so thematically, that picture, in addition to just, I think it's a cool photograph, but it thematically fits. It's more than just a cool photograph because it thematically fits what I'm going for. Now, it also, you know, I am sure that there are other artistic ways that one could go about choosing a cover. Mm-hmm. and a photo that belongs on the cover. But I think that in addition to trying as a selling point, a picture that represents what's in there, I think that it's one of those things that if our message to the reader starts with the cover, then the cover, I think, almost in addition to just being visually appealing, mm-hmm. it has to be, I think, something that is representative of the contents inside. And mm-hmm. so I actually put a decent amount of thought into cover choices, both because I want to sell books, but also because I want it to represent what's in them.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because as you're talking there and you're talking about some of those pictures, I was thinking of the books that I consume, right? And go through and read and listen. And do I pay attention to the cover art that much? And it's never that first factor, right? Usually I get recommendations from friends and, oh, you got to check this out, that kind of thing. But then when it comes down to actually like pushing that button for online or picking it up from the bookstore, like it is one of those last factors where like, okay, it's almost like a comfort level, right? Mm-hmm. Is it going to represent what I'm going to get out of my reading experience from there? So
absolutely. Because even if you're not going to, and you're never going to get the entire story from a cover, but at least it gives like some sort of intrigue, right? Like, okay, this is interesting. I wonder where this cover is going, right? Sure. Like, I wonder what's in here. Match that up with the title and other factors. And it's part of the sales pitch.
Yeah.
It's part of the sales pitch.
100%. So keeping on this publishing theme, I think we got something going here. What trends or changes in the publishing industry have you seen kind of happen these last few years as you've become published that you think new authors really need to be aware of? What were some of those pitfalls?
Absolutely. Well, one of the cool things that I think has been happening probably over, if not, like it might even be definitely over the last 20 years, is the gatekeeping is falling. Mm-hmm. When it was all about traditional publishing, they had all of the power, right? Like all of these big houses and small presses, they had the power to choose who are we going to publish, who are we not going to publish. And now, as we've gone further into the internet age, and we have a lot more ability as writers to, first of all, find more easily small presses that might be more open. Small presses are popping up all the time. And then there's the self-publishing option. So as writers, we have a lot more opportunities now to get our stuff out there than we ever did before. That's the positive end. Mm-hmm. However, the downside to that is there's a greater volume of writing out there. It's kind of like on YouTube. Like, it's really easy for music artists and, you know, content creators to get their stuff out there, their art out there, but there's so much of it. And so how do you find an audience? Because there's so many more choices. And that, you know, is something that I think writers have to be aware of when choosing their path and where they want to go. It's easier, I think, to obviously, in terms of like just to get it out there with self-publishing or a small press, but they have to be aware that the obstacles that are in their way, because they're going to have to promote, they're going to have to find ways, creative ways to get their works in people's hands. Why should I choose this book out of thousands? Sure. You know, that's a lot of that falls on not just necessarily the writer. If there is a small press, a publisher, then that works on them too. But there's just so much more of it out there, you know, and then you have to also be careful in the self-publishing small press field of vanity press.
Yeah.
The kind of presses that will come up, because I see this a lot in writing groups online, like people who are trying to get their stuff out there. A publisher will say, well, if you pay us like $3,000, $4,000, mm-hmm. we'll get your book out there. That just reeks of scam, right? Like, those are people who are trying to take advantage of folks who are trying to get their art out there, their writing out there. That's one thing I always tell people to avoid. Don't pay to get your stuff published. Mm-hmm. They're going to take care of you, right? They might not do all of your work, but you shouldn't have to pay.
Sure. Right?
And, you know, so I always tell people, especially who are just starting out, watch for that. If they start asking for money for anything, and the editing is different. If there's an editing service or a cover design service, that's something else. But if in terms of just to get it out there, that's a red flag.
Yeah. You know, I see people turning to that usually when they've been rejected, right? Multiple times or from other areas. You know, have you or how do you handle rejection or criticism that's come in about some of your work?
I probably handle it better than a lot of people do. And I think that part of that is just becoming, just getting thicker and thicker skin. And that's one of the benefits of my journey, which started here at Saginaw Valley. If you get into a creative writing workshop class, at least one that's run well, you're going to get constructive criticism. That's part of the game. That's part of the writing game. And so you're going to get people that will tell you, who hopefully have your best interests in mind, that this isn't working, this isn't going well. And so I had a chance to get used to that here, and I worked to get my students used to it. Now that I'm the facilitator and running workshops. And I think that that thicker skin has helped prepare me for rejections, because that's the next step. Already this year, just a couple days into the school year, I'm talking to students and saying, look, this is part of this is part of the game. Because if the game is a writer, one of the end games is to get published, you're going to have to deal with rejection, because you're going to get far more rejection letters than you are even really established writers, like writers I really admire. They're still getting them, and they've had lots of books published too.
Sure.
And so I think part of that comes from just persevering and fighting through it, and knowing that, look, even if this piece is rejected, this is something else that helps, because different journals have different aims that they're trying to achieve with their press, right? And so while one piece, if it's a short or some, even if it's a longer work like a novel, that might be appealing to some publishers because that's the kind of work they work in. But that doesn't mean that if they're going to reject something, that another publisher won't accept it, right? And so that helps too. Like maybe it's just not finding the right audience. And so there are things that you can tell yourself that way, which are true, that also help to ease any pain that comes along with rejection. But really, that's, I think, the biggest thing is just getting used to it. It's like, you know, you catch the same, you know, you catch this, you catch an illness, your immune system builds up over time. The more illnesses you catch, it's the same thing, I think. For me, at least, that's how I deal with rejection now. I deal with it a lot better just because I've gone through it so much.
Yeah.
And everybody has. So
That hits so hard for me, because I laugh. I think I'm set up to be a writer, and I always joke, you know, before I found my wife, my dating life was a lot of no's, right? So it was okay to understand and go. And then once you find the right person, or you find the right publisher in this case, then you're finding that right audience, and that work is going to find life, right? Out there. So
100%. And that's the same thing with me and my wife. Like, yeah, like, you know, and you know when you find the right one too, and it's great.
Absolutely.
Like, it just clicks, and it's a lot like that, I think.
That's amazing. That's awesome. A personal question. Get ready. Sorry.
Okay.
What do you give me a reading recommendation right now? I'm out there. I like a lot of fiction. I'm a dad just like you. We were talking about having young kids. I don't have a ton of time, but I like to get out there and read. What's something that you're reading right now that's moving you and that you would want to share?
I'm always buying shorts, because my stuff, because I work with teaching and creative writing, it's easier for me to work with short stories and poems, just because I'm working with prompts, right?
Sure.
And so I really like a lot of modern poetry and fiction. I read some old stuff, and I really appreciate old stuff. But some of my favorite poets, for instance, Rudy Francisco is an incredible poet. Taylor Molly, a former teacher, is an incredible poet that I love to read. Patricia Smith, all of their works, all of their collections have. Kevin Cavall out of Chicago. Just some really, really good contemporary poets that are speaking to a lot of issues I care about. In terms of fiction, I am a huge George Saunders fan.
Okay.
I love satire. I love kind of the dystopian kind of material that he puts out. And he has, I think he only has one novel, Lincoln at the Bardo, but his short stories are so good. Yeah. And I love working with that kind of material too. I think that primarily right now, like, I've been reading more poetry, but with fiction, gosh, Saunders is the first thing that comes to mind right now.
All right.
He's so good.
I'll remember that. I'll take that in consideration, and I'll be out there recommending folks your book soon.
Oh, thank you.
So we're getting towards the end. We're getting ready to wrap up a little bit, and you know, we've talked a lot about the process and just all of the different steps that it's take. What if you were sitting here and you were talking to me as a young alum, someone out there, and I tell you that, you know, I really have a passion for writing, getting my work out there. What would be the one big piece of advice that you would sit and say, okay, I'm glad that you're passionate about it, this. This is what you need to do to be successful. If you had to narrow it down, what would it be?
I can tell you what worked for me. I was talking earlier in the writing process about keeping my eyes open. And I think that you have to do the same thing when you're looking for someone to take a look at your work. And we were also talking about the internet age and how the internet opens up so many opportunities. I think before the internet, or even in the early days of the internet, before social media, you probably would have to go like through much more tedious processes and looking for publishing houses and writing them letters and sending them manuscripts on a whim. But because of the internet, as I was talking about earlier with small presses just blowing up all over the place, usually they'll have an online footprint. And so in addition to like just going to Google and Googling small presses and publications, I've actually utilized social media a lot that way. There are a lot of writing groups out there on Facebook and other platforms where they'll be specifically for writers who are interested in sharing their work with each other, but also looking for opportunities for publication. Now, that might be for full-length collections like mine, but before I was putting out full length collections, I'd be looking for anthologies. And there's groups just out there for calls for submission. And if you are willing to do the work to look there, sometimes those opportunities will pop up that won't even show up on Google, right? Sure. And so I think you have to get used to, especially if you're just starting out, looking for those opportunities, trying to find where they're available, but don't just go with traditional routes like looking up information. Like, actually look out there and see what you can find. I don't think I would have found my publisher and if not for that process. So my relationship with my publisher just started with a call for submission that I found in a Facebook group for another publisher. They just put their stuff out there, and I sent in a couple of pieces for an anthology they were putting together, and that's how it all started. And so just look for your opportunities, even if those opportunities aren't in traditional spots where one might have looked exclusively 20 years ago.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, this has been great. Super informative. Jared, I really appreciate your time and your expertise coming in. I wish you all the success of our alumni friends out there. The latest book is Lost in America by Poems by Jared Morningstar. Look for it out there. Support our alums. We love alumni supporting each other. And again, just thank you. I can't wait to see what comes out of this. And hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Sounds good, Nick. Thank you. It's a good day to be a Cardinal.
It's a great day to be a Carol. Thanks, Jared. Take care.
Thank you.